So years ago, how many of you, I have to ask this because every now and then I read these polls of, you know, so-and-so percentage of people say this about this, and I've never been called, like I've never answered a poll question ever in my life. Anybody here? I'm just curious. One person, okay.
About two questions?
Huh?
Answered telephone polls.
Telephone polls, okay, all right. Okay, so like half of you have, okay. All right, so well that's good because I've never, but you read these polls and you kind of wonder who are the people that they're calling, and it's good to know that I know some of you, so that's awesome. So years ago, George Gallup did a poll and asked thousands of Americans what their greatest needs were. What do you really need that you don't have? And what's interesting is of all the answers they came up with, in the top three, one of the top three needs that Americans said they do not have is friendship. Thousands of people said, I have no close friends, and that's something I really wish I have. Now, think about it. We all long for friendship, don't we? Not just acquaintances, but friends. Friendship, it's that person that you can count on no matter what. It's that person that you know will be there for you when you really need somebody to be there for you. That person that knows you, they know your secrets, they know what you're really like and who you really are, and yet they still love you and they still accept you and they still welcome you. It's that person that you can spend good times with and bad times with. You can laugh with them, you can cry with them, you can be honest with them. It's that person who you have given the right to speak honestly into your life and to challenge you and to confront you in those moments when that needs to happen. We all want close friends. The fact is, not only do we want close friends, we need close friends. Some studies suggest that if you isolate yourselves from other people, then you are 2 to 3 times more likely to die a premature death. Going through life without friends is not a healthy thing. In fact, way back in the very beginning, God said it is not good for us to be alone. We need each other. We need friendships. Today we're going to pick up the story of David where we left off last week. We've been talking for the last few weeks about David and Goliath and this very short battle that happens between them. And we closed that out last week. And, you know, just in summary, Goliath has been challenging Israel for 40 days and coming out and threatening them. And everybody's afraid of him and they hide in their tents. And then David shows up and he says, I'll take care of this. And he goes out with just a slingshot and a few stones and boom, takes him down. You know, gets, you know, one stone right in the middle of his forehead, knocks him down, rushes over, takes Goliath's sword, kills him with it, chops off his head. Boom, battle's over. And so David, after this, David goes in and he talks to Saul and they're having this conversation. Now, that moment in time when David killed Goliath, it set into motion a series of events that changed the life of the nation of Israel and changed David's life. And one of the things that happened that day that was very significant is that David developed a new friendship. And that friendship changed his life in several ways, and that friendship actually saved his life on several occasions. And so we're going to pick up the story where we left off last week in 1 Samuel 18. David goes into King Saul's tent, and he's having a conversation, and we pick up the conversation just as it finishes. Look at chapter 18, starting in verse 1. It says, after David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. From that day on, Saul kept David with him and wouldn't let him return home. So David walks in, he's having this conversation with Saul, and one of King Saul's sons, his oldest son, Jonathan, is there, and it says there was an immediate bond between them. Hey, have you ever had that experience where you meet somebody and just right away, it just clicks, you know what I mean? Like there's just something you have in common, it's just like, I could really enjoy spending time with this person. This person gets me. We have the same sense of humor or a similar personality or some of the same likes and dislikes. And it just feels like this would be a really good friendship. And that's kind of what happens here with David and Jonathan. And then it also says Saul is really impressed with David at this point, and who wouldn't be? And Saul says, I want you to stay with me. You're now going to be part of my household. And if you remember a few weeks ago, we talked about one of the rewards for killing Goliath would be to marry the king's daughter. And so David is about to become Saul's son-in-law. You can see bad things coming on the horizon, right? So anyways, this is kind of a setup to what's happening in the story. But then it talks more about David and Jonathan's friendship. Notice what happens next, verse 3. It says, Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved himself. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David together with his tunic, sword, bow, and belt. And so Jonathan begins a covenant relationship with David where he basically commits himself to David and says, David, you can count on me. This is more than just an acquaintance. This is more than just, hey, we're good friends. Let's go to the movies together or whatever. This is somebody saying, I'm committing my life. I'm going to be there for you no matter what. And he gives him these gifts as symbols of this commitment that he's making to him to be there for him no matter what. And so when we look at Jonathan and his commitment to David, we learn a lot about what great friendship looks like. And let me just start by drawing out one important thing here. Look at verse 1 and 3 again. It says there was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. And then in verse 3, it says Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. That's significant. And that phrase is repeated a couple of chapters later in chapter 20. Again, it says that Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. One of the keys to any healthy relationship and a healthy friendship is selfless love. Remember, Jesus said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Not just kind of in passing, but the concern you have for yourself and for your well-being, have that same concern for that other person. And that's what love really looks like. Years ago, I came across what I think is the best definition of love, and it goes like this. Genuine love means this, that the needs of the other person are more important to you than your own needs. That's what true love looks like, that you're more concerned with the needs of the other person than you are with your own. So, you know, when you think about that in any relationship, whether it's a marriage or, you know, between kids and their parents or a close friendship, isn't it true there's going to be times when their needs are in competition with yours? When their interests are in competition with yours? When their rights are in competition with yours? Genuine love means that when that happens, if I truly love that person, I place higher priority on their needs, their rights, their wants. I choose that over my wants and my needs and my rights. That is genuine, selfless, sacrificial love. And so as we talk about Jonathan and the love he showed David, I think it's important for us not just to look at this story and to say, wow, that's a really cool friendship, but to apply that to ourselves and not even to say, well, I wish I had somebody like that in my life, but to ask ourselves the questions, am I showing that kind of love towards those that God has brought into my life? Am I showing this kind of selfless love to my spouse, to my child, to my parents, to my friends? Am I treating them the way that I would like to be treated? Because again, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. And Paul reiterates that later when he writes, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. So genuine love means that I place that person's interests above my own interest. It's the hallmark of a great friendship, and that kind of love is characterized in several different ways. And we're going to take a look at this with Jonathan and David. One of the ways Jonathan shows this selfless love is through a fierce sense of loyalty towards David. The relationship between David and Saul changes fairly quickly after this. So initially, Saul is very impressed with David. And he says, David, you're part of my family now. You're part of the household. And he gives David command over several of his troops. So David is now a military guy under Saul's leadership. And David and his troops, they have victory after victory after victory. And David very quickly proves himself as a great military leader. He's got this incredible skill like no one else. And Saul is very impressed with him. And Saul's very thankful for the success David has on behalf of Saul's kingdom. But then everything changes on one day. As Saul is traveling through one of the towns in his kingdom, he overhears some women singing this song that had become very popular. And there were a lot of songs going around about their military heroes, and they're singing this song about Saul and about David, and it went like this. Saul has killed thousands of our enemies, but David has killed tens of thousands of our enemies. And when Saul hears this, he is infuriated. And he despises David now because they're elevating David and his military skill above Saul and his military skill. And from that moment forward, Saul is incredibly jealous of David, and David is no longer welcome. In fact, Saul seeks to have David killed. Now, I want you to think for a minute of the position that puts Jonathan in, because he is Saul's firstborn son. He's the heir to the throne. He's in line to be the next king of Israel. And at the same time, he is best friends with David, who Saul wants to kill. So we just looked at a few verses in chapter 18. Saul brings David in. He says, you're part of the family now. Just one chapter later now, everything has changed. And we come to chapter 19 and look at what happens starting in verse 1. Saul now urged his servants and his son Jonathan to assassinate David. So this is beyond Saul just being angry with him. This is beyond Saul saying, I wish he was dead. This is Saul pulling in his son and pulling in his military leaders and saying, I want you to take him out. I'm giving you orders to kill David. So Jonathan, since he's in this covenant relationship with David, he doesn't want this to happen. So look what happens next. But Jonathan, because of his strong affection for David, told him what his father was planning. Tomorrow morning, he warned him, you must find a hiding place out in the fields. I'll ask my father to go out there with me, and I'll talk to him about you. And then I'll tell you everything I can find out. So Jonathan warns David. He says, you don't know what's going on. My dad is plotting behind your back to have you killed. You need to go into hiding. I'm going to talk with him and find out what his plans are, and then I'm going to come and find you and fill you in so you can be safe. So Jonathan is going out of his way to protect David. Why? Because he's loyal to him. So take a look at the next few verses here. The next morning, verse 4, the next morning Jonathan spoke with his father about David, saying many good things about him. So he's building David up. He's complimenting David in front of King Saul and saying, this is a good guy. And he says, the king must not sin against his servant David, Jonathan said. He's never done anything to harm you. He's always helped you in any way he could. Have you forgotten about the time he risked his life to kill the Philistine giant and how the Lord brought about a great victory to all Israel as a result? He's like, don't you remember David killed Goliath? Like, you weren't willing to do that. Nobody in Israel was willing to do that. David's the guy who stepped forward and said, I'll take care of this. And he rescued all of us. Why would you want to kill him after what he's done for you? And then he goes on, he says, you were certainly happy about it then. Why should you murder an innocent man like David? There's no reason for it at all. You have to imagine, this is kind of an awkward conversation, right? Like, have you ever had that conversation? Hey, Dad, I don't think you should murder this person. It's probably a bad idea. Like, that's kind of an awkward conversation, right? And so Saul, he listens to reason. He says, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to do this anymore. And so he welcomes David back into the household, and everything seems to be fine for the time being. But again, think of the position this puts Jonathan in. He has to pick sides. Like, do you think this is comfortable for him? Because on the one side is his dad, who is clearly in the wrong. And then on the other side is his best friend, who he has sworn to protect. And Jonathan steps forward and speaks up on David's behalf. Have you ever been in a situation like that where a friend of yours was being mischaracterized and they're being lied about and they're being falsely accused and people are gossiping about them and you're hearing what's going on and you're aware of what's happening? And how do you respond when that's happening? I think our tendency, a lot of times, our temptation is to be internally upset, but not really to do anything about it, because we tend to be kind of conflict avoidant. You know, we hear what's going on and inside we're angry and we say, I can't believe they're saying this. They don't know this person the way I know them. How could they say these things? But we don't do anything about it. And here Jonathan, he says, I'm not just going to let this happen. I'm going to step forward, put myself in a very uncomfortable situation, and I'm going to speak up on his behalf. And he does. And as a result, he saves the life of his friend David. Loyalty is a key ingredient in a healthy relationship, and it's an expression of selfless love. Jonathan's love for David goes beyond loyalty, though, because the way he shows love to David moves into sacrifice, and Jonathan sacrifices a lot to protect David. So in the verses we just looked at, in chapter 19, Saul has said, okay, everything's fine, and he brings David back in, but then later on in that chapter, Saul becomes upset again. Like, Saul is just back and forth on this whole thing, and we'll see that more when we talk about Saul and David in a couple of weeks. But Saul's just back and forth on this whole thing, and so he changes his mind again, and he's angry at David and wants him killed. And David finds out about this, but Jonathan is not aware of it yet. And so we come to chapter 20, and take a look at what happens. David runs again. It says this in verse 1, David now fled from Naoth and Ramah and found Jonathan. "What have I done?" he exclaimed. "What is my crime? How have I offended your father that he's so determined to kill me?" "That's not true," Jonathan protested. "You're not going to die. He always tells me everything he's going to do, even the little things. I know my father wouldn't hide something like this from me. It just isn't so." So Jonathan has no clue at this point that Saul has changed his mind. David finds out. David is on the run. He finds Jonathan. He says, "Hey, what's going on? Why does he want to kill me again?" And Jonathan says, "He's not going to kill you. He would have told me if he was after you again." But then David makes a really good point. Look at verse 3. It says, "Then David took an oath before Jonathan and said, 'Your father knows perfectly well about our friendship.' So he has said to himself, 'I won't tell Jonathan. Why should I hurt him?'" So David points out, okay, your dad knows that you and I are friends. He's not going to tell you this time because last time he told you, you came and warned me. So he's hiding this from you because he doesn't want me to escape. And then he says, "I swear to you, I'm only a step away from death. I swear it by the Lord and by your own soul." Notice what Jonathan says in verse 4. "Tell me what I can do to help you." I want you to think about that statement for a minute. "Tell me what I can do to help you." See, there's a difference between saying, "Here are the things I can do to help you. Here's what I'm willing to do. Here's how far I'm willing to go." Jonathan doesn't do that. He says, "Tell me what I can do." In other words, this is Jonathan saying, "Whatever you need from me, my answer already is yes. I don't need to know ahead of time what you're asking of me. The answer is yes. Whatever you need, I'm willing to sacrifice it on your behalf." Like, think about it this way. How do you respond? Like when somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, will you do me a favor?" How do you respond to that question? Depends. Right? What does it depend on? What the favor is. What else does it depend on? What you're willing to do. Does it depend on who the person is that asks? That's a big part of it too. So like there's two ways of responding, right? Somebody says, "Will you do me a favor?" You're like, "Well, what's the favor?" It depends on what the favor is. The other way of responding is, "Sure, absolutely." If you say, "Sure, absolutely," it means you really trust that person, right? If you say, "Well, what's the favor?" or "It depends," that means you don't really trust that person. You're not sure what they're going to ask. They may ask you to do something ridiculous. This is Jonathan saying to David, "You can ask me a favor. I don't need to know ahead of time what it is. My answer already is yes. I will do whatever you need me to do." That's a huge sacrifice. Like, that's Jonathan writing a blank check and saying, "Here, you fill in the amount and I'll cover whatever it is." Jonathan is willing to put himself on the line and to sacrifice a lot for his friend David. Let's talk about two things specifically that he was willing to sacrifice. The first one is personal ambition. So we're in chapter 20, and David has sought out Jonathan and said, "Your dad is after me again. Here's what's going on." Jonathan says, "I'll do whatever you need me to do. You can count on me. I'll be there for you." So later on in the chapter, Israel is at a time of feasting and celebration, and it's a couple of days off of work and all these get-togethers and celebrations. And so, of course, there's a lot going on at King Saul's palace, and David is supposed to be there, right? Because he's part of the family now. He's part of Saul's cabinet. He's a family member now, the son-in-law. He is a military leader. David's expected to be there in Saul's household for the celebration, but he's not because he's in hiding. So the fact that he's not there sparks a conversation. Saul wants to know, why isn't David here? Where is he? So we pick up in verse 27. And it says this, "When David's place was empty again the next day, Saul asked Jonathan, 'Why hasn't the son of Jesse been here for the meal either yesterday or today?'" I think it's interesting. He doesn't say, "Where is David?" He says, "The son of Jesse." Like, he's not even willing to say his name. You remember that kid, that Jesse's son, whatever that guy's name? Like, he doesn't even say him by name. It's like he's distancing himself from him so much. Why isn't he here? And he asked Jonathan because he knows Jonathan is his friend. So Jonathan basically covers for David. He says, verse 28, Jonathan replied, David earnestly asked me if he could go to Bethlehem. He said, please let me go, for we're having a family sacrifice. My brother demanded that I be there, so please let me get away to see my brothers. That's why he isn't here at the king's table. So Saul wants to know, where is David? Jonathan says he's with his family. His brothers wanted him there today, so he's with them. Now, Saul doesn't take this very well because he was hoping David would be there so he could ambush him and have him killed. So Saul reacts this way, verse 30. Saul boiled with rage at Jonathan. You stupid son of a whore, he swore at him. Do you think I don't know that you want him to be king in your place, shaming yourself and your mother? As long as that son of Jesse is alive, you'll never be king. Now go and get him so I can kill him. Get the idea, Saul's a little upset here, right? Like, this is a little over the top reaction to, okay, he's not here today to have dinner with us. Saul is incredibly angry because more than anything, he wants David dead, and this has become an obsession for him. But I want you to notice something significant Saul says in verse 31. As long as he's alive, you're not going to be king. Who's next in line to be the king of Israel? Jonathan. He's the prince. He's the rightful heir to the throne. And Jonathan knows that as long as David is alive, I will never be king because God has chosen him instead of me. How does Jonathan respond to that? He protects David. He doesn't protect his own ambition. He doesn't protect his own rights. He protects David. He knows if David is dead, I'm going to be the next king. But if David lives, I'll never be king. He knows this, but he protects David anyways. He's willing to sacrifice his personal ambition for his friend David. In fact, we're jump ahead just a couple of chapters here. We're going to stay in chapter 20. Let me just show you a couple of verses here from chapter 23. David is still on the run. This goes on for a very long time. Chapter 23, verses 15 through 17, it says, one day near Horesh, David received the news that Saul was on the way to Ziph to search for him and kill him. So Saul is still after him three chapters later. Jonathan went to find David and encouraged him to stay strong in his faith in God. That's a good friend. Jonathan is going to David and saying, I know things are not working out the way you thought they would. And I know it's really hard right now, and your life is in grave danger, but I want you to stay strong in your faith in God. Don't let what Saul is doing sidetrack you from the fact that God is at work in your life right now. And then he says this, don't be afraid. My father will never find you. You are going to be the king of Israel, and I will be next to you, as my father Saul is well aware. When Jonathan says, I will be next to you, it's not Jonathan saying, I expect to be your right-hand guy. I expect to be in your cabinet. The literal translation there is, I will be second to you. In other words, this is Jonathan saying, I am the prince. I am the king's son. I am the rightful heir to the throne, but you will be in authority over me. You come before me. You have higher priority in what's happening here than I do. I think that says a lot about Jonathan. Like, there's no hint of jealousy here. There's no suggestion of, well, why shouldn't I be king? What makes you better than me? There's none of that there. Jonathan knows that God has chosen and anointed David to be the king, not him. And unlike David's older brother, Eliab, that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, who was jealous, and unlike Saul, who was jealous and so filled with lust for power, he's willing to kill anybody he thinks is a threat, even David, who had served him so well. Unlike those two guys, Jonathan knows, I deserve to be the next king, but I will never be king because God has chosen David instead of me. And instead of being filled with anger and jealousy, he honors and protects David. See, one of the marks of a true friend is that we support the other person when something amazing happens in their life that we wish would happen to us but didn't, that we can still rejoice with them. When a friend surpasses us in an area that we really want to do well in, when they find success in an area that we have failed, when God answers a prayer for them that God did not answer for us, when things work out for them that we were hoping would work out for us but didn't, when that happens and we can still love them, support them, celebrate with them, instead of going into this, well, why would God do that for them and not me? But we can rejoice with those who rejoice That is a mark of true friendship. Jonathan was willing to honor God's work in David's life because he was willing to sacrifice personal ambition on behalf of his friend David. Another thing Jonathan was willing to sacrifice for his friend was his own safety. So back in chapter 20, Saul is asking, why isn't David here? Why isn't the son of Jesse here? And Jonathan says he's with his family. That's why he's not here today. Saul freaks out, starts calling him names. He's yelling at him. And what's interesting is Jonathan does not back down. Jonathan knows at this point, okay, this is a dangerous situation. But he refused to back down anyways. Take a look at what happens next, verse 32. Why should he be put to death? Jonathan asked his father. What has he done? So Jonathan is still defending David. And that's a logical question, right? He's saying, okay, what has he done to you? Why do you want him dead? He's done nothing to harm you. He's done nothing deserving death. He asks a logical question. Now Saul kind of ponders this over and digs deep. He's like, well, let me give you the most thoughtful response to that question I can come up with. Look at verse 33. Then Saul hurled his spear at Jonathan, intending to kill him. Okay, there's your answer, right? That's what happens when you confront your dad, who is the king and also is demon-possessed. You get spears thrown at you. And I love what happens, what it says next. Look at this. So at last, Jonathan realized that his father was really determined to kill David. It's like, oh, now I get it. He's angry about this. Like this is the first time he kind of clues in that, okay, I think we've got problems in this family. My dad just threw a spear at me. I think our family's a little bit dysfunctional, right? And Jonathan concludes, okay, he's turned a corner this time and he's not going back. Like from now on, he wants David dead. David is in big trouble. But here's what I want you to see. Jonathan goes out on a limb here to protect his friend David. Like he knows his dad is angry at David. He's heard his father just yelling across the table at him just now, calling him names for defending David and making threats against David, saying, bring him to me so I can kill him. And yet he still stands up for David and he refuses to back down. Time after time, he puts himself in the way of danger, risking his own safety for his friend David. Now, how does that translate to our life and our friendships? Jonathan is willing to sacrifice a kingdom for his friend. He's willing to risk his life for his friend. Chances are you're not an heir to a throne and have a kingdom to risk. And I'm hoping the odds of a family member trying to pin you to the wall with a spear are pretty slim. At least I hope so. But there are things we can sacrifice for our friends, aren't there? Aren't there ways that placing their needs and their interests and their rights above our own, aren't there ways that we overlook that in just everyday life? Like sometimes sacrificing for a friend, it might mean you've had a long, bad day, a frustrating day. You just want to watch TV. You just want to do something relaxing, but your friend needs to talk about something. And maybe sacrifice means you take the time to listen and let them talk to you about what they need to talk about. And when I say listen, I don't mean doing this. I mean listening. Face-to-face conversation, giving them the attention that they need and that they deserve. Maybe that's a sacrifice that you need to make for a friend. It might mean confronting your friend about something that they're engaged with that you know is harmful and you know is bad for them, that you know is harming them, and it's really hard to bring it up. It's really difficult to bring it up because even just saying, hey, you have bad breath is a really difficult conversation. But there's this thing they're doing that you know is going to lead to disaster for them. And if you don't say something, nobody else will. Maybe that's a sacrifice that you need to make for a friend. Maybe the sacrifice you need to make is that you've got a friend who doesn't know Christ. And having that conversation with them, it can be difficult. It can be an awkward conversation, but maybe for you, the sacrifice is getting past that awkwardness and just saying, you know, I don't know how to say this. I don't know how to naturally start this conversation, but let me tell you about what Jesus has done in my life, and I really want you to know him too. Maybe that's the sacrifice you need to make. Or maybe the sacrifice you need to make for a friend is just saying something like Jonathan said to David, of saying, you know what, I know you're going through a really difficult time right now, and I have no idea what you're going to ask of me. I have no idea what you need from me, but I want you to know my answer is yes. Whatever you need, you can count on me. Whatever you need, I will be there for you. Just say the word. See, I think it's easy for us to listen to a message like this and to kind of do this thing of, well, why don't I have a friend that treats me that way? Why can't God give me a friend like Jonathan who loves me the way Jonathan loved David? I think that's one way we could respond, but I think the way for us to respond instead is to say, who is that person that I can be that friend to? Who is the person that maybe they're being treated unfairly, maybe they're being chased down by life right now, maybe they're going through a really hard time and they need me to step into their life and to be Jonathan to them as they're going through that difficult time? And I want to encourage you throughout this week, if you don't have a friend like that in your life, to maybe pray that through and say, okay, God, who is it that you're calling me to step into their life and to be there for them, to show them that kind of loyalty, to show them that kind of sacrificial, selfless love? Who is that person? Let me say one other thing in closing, and it's this. We talked about self-sacrifice. We talked about selfless love. The ultimate expression of that is Jesus, because he is the best friend you'll ever have. Like when it comes to loyalty and defending someone, the Bible tells us Jesus is our advocate, that he's the one who steps forward. When the enemy accuses us, Jesus is the one who steps forward and says, no, it's covered, it's forgiven. We talked about self-sacrifice. Jesus is the one who left heaven behind and came to this earth and sacrificed himself on our behalf. And he did it not when we had everything together. He did it while we were still sinners, when we had turned our backs on him. He pursued us because he loves us that much. See, and the great thing about Jesus as our friend is this. His love for us, it's not based on this idealistic view of who we might be. It's based on absolute reality, a complete understanding of who we really are. Like, he knows everything about us. There's never gonna come a moment in time where he says, aha, I caught you. I just discovered something about you and I can't stand to look at you now because of what I just found out about you. That's never going to happen. He knows all of the wickedness in my heart. He knows every foul thought I've ever had, every evil deed I've ever done, or every temptation I've ever given into. He is fully aware of all of it, and yet he still loves me and pursues me. That's the friend he is. And if you don't know him as a friend, you need to. Because he willingly came to this earth and sacrificed the joys of heaven and sacrificed the comfort of just being a nice guy and having friends. He sacrificed all of that to die a brutal death so he could pave the way for you to experience forgiveness and new life and a friendship with him that lasts for eternity. So let me just pray about that right now. Father, I just want to pray for anyone here today who maybe they know some things about you, and maybe they've gone to church, and maybe they know some things about the Bible, but they don't know you in a personal way. God, I pray that by your Holy Spirit, you would convince them of how necessary that is. That today would be the day that they say, okay, Jesus, I acknowledge to you that I have sinned. I've done things I shouldn't have done, and I can't fix that myself. And so I ask you to come in, to forgive me, to make me a new person, to give me a new life, and to help me to follow you. I pray that today would be that day for anyone here that's not yet made that decision. Thank you that you sacrificed so much to make that possible. In Jesus' name, amen.